Before we begin, we would like to thank Six Point Builders for their support of our show. Six Point Builders are builders of fine custom homes in the Boston metropolitan area. Welcome, everyone, to another episode of Revolution Recap, part of the Believe Network. We're coming to you after the New England Revolution lost again, 1-0 to Toronto FC. It's the second 1-0 loss of the season to Toronto FC, and the Revs have now fallen to 1-6-1 in the MLS campaign. 4 points through 8 games, a disastrous start for a team that suddenly is potentially realistically in the wooden spoon contenders pile. I'm Greg Johnstone, joined today by Tom Pinzone of the Blazing Musket. Tom, how is it going?
It's going great. I watched, I prepped myself by watching two other soccer games before watching this one today, and I actually quite enjoyed both of them. So that kind of balances out, you know, what we keep seeing every time the Revs take the field.
Yeah, you need to dip into other sports, and I have been, unfortunately, watching the Boston Red Sox, which I think a few weeks ago, the last time I was on, I said I was, you know, the Revs got me excited for the Boston Red Sox, and the Red Sox started like 5-2, and oh boy, boy, you talk about bad defense. Oh my goodness. So I am, I guess I'm now going to switch over to NBA playoffs when I am not watching New England Revolution, and I'll also say that I've had a couple of weeks off. I've been avoiding watching the Revs like the plague. You've been doing this is like your third straight week on the show. You did a TFC podcast this week. You are right in the thick of things, so I'm a little concerned about your mental health. Are you doing okay?
I mean, I do enjoy, you know, talking about soccer. I would like to talk about winning soccer a little bit more, but yeah, I had a really good time with the Toronto Till I Die guys. They were, you know, that was a good time. And you know, they said, hey, look, you know, they were in the same place that we are, you know, a year ago. And now they seem to be doing quite a bit better. So I guess there's, you know, there's hope for the future.
There is hope for the future. They certainly they certainly related to the misery. So I give them credit for their sympathy, or I appreciate their sympathy. Before we get into our show, I wanted to lead off too by mentioning, Tom, you and I both are contributors to the Blazing Musket. Right now they are doing a raffle for next weekend's Inter Miami game that is going to be at Gillette Stadium. They got a donation for 2 tickets. It's not in the nosebleeds. They're in the 100 section. If you're a paid subscriber, you're eligible to enter the raffle. You just have to comment on the article that describes the raffle. So if you go through the Blazing Muskets posts, you'll see the post earlier this afternoon about the raffle. Just go comment there. If you're already a paid subscriber, I don't know why you wouldn't do this. So just want to lead off with that right away. If you're a paid subscriber, make sure you're commenting so you can get your tickets to next week's game to obviously cheer on the Revs, because you definitely want to watch more of the Revolution right now. There's definitely nothing else coming to town next week, which is why that's a hotter ticket. I also want to tell you about our sponsor, Bet Online. Whether you want to bet on Shohei Ohtani or you're just interpreting for him, Bet Online is your number one source for all of your summer sports, from MLB, MLS, golf, NBA, and NHL playoffs. Get the latest odds and lines, including the latest team matchups, player props, and odds on just about every sport out there. Head to the website today or use your mobile device to get in on the action. Bet Online, where the game starts. And remember to use promo code BLEAV, B-L-E-A-V, for a 50% welcome bonus on your first deposit. Let's, unfortunately, hop right into this game. We got to talk about this. This is the worst part of the show where we actually have to talk about the game. We'll hop into our key takeaways brought to you by our friends over at The Rebellion. Check them out on Twitter at AnyRebellion or on their website, anyrebellion.org. Tom, what's your key takeaway today?
Look, if this was the first away game of the year and not the fourth, you could maybe kind of excuse it. And, you know, look, they had a decent amount of shots. You know, they had 8 corners. Toronto didn't have any. You know, they had a couple of chances. Like, it wasn't a complete disaster of an away performance. But the reality is that this is the fourth away game, and still at this point, that's the only good thing you can say about this game is that it wasn't a complete disaster like the first 3 away games. You know, that I mean, that it's kind of a sad reflection on where we're at with this team right now, where a not terrible but still not good performance is better than what we've done. I mean, we only lost by one, so that's the narrowest margin of defeat that they've had on the road all season. So, you know, it's very bleak that this is the fourth away game that they've played this season, and it, you know, again, just all the same stuff that we've been talking about is still there, despite what, you know, whatever Porter says as he goes on and on and on with his press conferences during the week.
Not the worst road game of the year. I think we can hang the banner. We have to that's a very optimistic take. And Tom, I do want to address this before we forget. And this was tweeted out right before we came on. Caleb Porter said in the press conference that they were the better team today, which is interesting. And we got a good laugh out of that. And you said it first, but I had the same kind of reaction. I don't think that's true. I mean, they had possession. They had some good moments, but Rabas had two howlers in the first third of the game. The first time there was a long ball over the top. Rabas, I have no idea what he was doing. Doesn't even come close to it. That should have been a goal. He turns the ball over in his final third, trying to pass the ball to, I believe it was Ryan Spalding. He kicks it with his left foot. Complete turnover leads to a very easy chance for TFC. So it was, I don't even think the cameras caught up to it. I think the cameras were on replay because they assumed it was kind of a boring time and play, and he turns it over. And then there was a penalty kick, which, truth be told, I think the Revs got a little screwed on that one. But that could have been a goal. So we talk about, well, they only lost by one today. Could have been much, much, much worse, because there were some big moments in this game that, boy, TFC really should have closed out. And the goal itself, you know, phenomenal finish, like a back heel finish. Like, Farrell probably should have closed that down a little bit sooner, but he certainly earns that goal. But you know, Ryan Spalding, who I thought had a pretty decent game overall. Again, I'm not holding him to a world-class standard or anything, but I thought he had a pretty good game, and I know he just got clocked in the head, but, you know, fails to clear. The Revs seem to be prone to a lot of horrific mistakes that just really, really kill them time and time and time again. So it was 1-0 on the scoreline, and if you look at all the stats, it seems you know, they don't seem to be getting blown out, you know, in the better team categories, right? Who is the better team? And you look at shots and you look at possession, and we've talked about that a few times, but in terms of just back-breaking mistakes, this team seems to make a ton of them.
Yeah, look, I mean, it certainly could have been worse than it was. I mean, you know, that's for sure. You know, Ravos coming out there, you know, that to me is – there's clearly trust issues within the team. If you trust your center backs to handle, you know, to handle a player on the ball and behind like that, then you don't come off your line. You stay and you defend the goal line, and you know, Spalding. I mean, look, I think Spalding had done well overall in the night. Like you said, I mean, he's just come back off the field after getting whacked in the head. I mean, I'm sure that's not really the first thing he wanted to have to deal with. You know, and Farrell was actually in a good position to defend that. He put him off a little bit. Like, I don't really think you can blame him too much, because a player does a backheel finish on goal, like, in midair. I mean, that's, you know, talking to the Toronto Till I Die guys during the week, you know, they don't think very highly of their strikers either. You know, so that's a chance that you wouldn't expect him to finish. But yeah, look, it certainly could have been, it could have been much, much worse. But all their away games probably could have been much, much worse than they actually were. You know, it's just, I don't know. It just seems to be how this season is going, that they're, you know, they're just not able to generate anything really on the road.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yep. Yep. I think that's well put. I'll move on to my key takeaway. And I think we got to talk about, I want to talk about two players. We have Tomas Csonkalai and Dave Romney, both left off of the starting lineup today, and there's really no reason for them not to be in this starting lineup. I had an interesting thought about Dave Romney a few weeks ago, because if you look at the games, he played 90 minutes pretty much every single game until the second leg, the Alajuente tie for the Champions Cup, where he was a sub off the bench. it was pretty much in hand at that point, so it's not really a surprise he was subbed off there. But he was moved to the bench for the April 6th game. He came in at halftime, I believe, for an injury. And then for the second leg of for the Club America game, he started the game, and I believe he was the only person that was a quote-unquote starter in that game. And I remember thinking, boy, how did Romney pull the short straw there? Since then, he started 90 minutes last week and then has came off. He's a substitute again today. So really, three of the last four games we've played there, he's kind of not in the starting, not with the starters, which I think is a bit peculiar. And I'm not really sure why he wouldn't play today. And then Chankalai too, he's had his struggles, certainly has not scored in MLS so far. He has four goals in the Champions Cup, but you know, it seems like he's been disappointing. And I do have a quote here. Hayden Bird tweeted this out before the game. Caleb Porter said on Thursday at his press conference, Thomas hasn't scored in the league. There are things he needs to improve on. He's had chances to score. A lot of it is confidence. I look at the Chicago game, for instance. He's in on a breakaway. If he scores that goal, his confidence probably grows. We win the game, changes everything. Those are the margins right now that people will forget. It seems broken. I know it's a lot closer than it looks from the outside. A lot of it is confidence. With Thomas, he hasn't scored the league. He does have quality. He also needs to figure out how in our system, minus the final third, how he fits in. He's a guy that wants to shoot a lot. He takes risks with the ball a lot. Can he simplify his game in the back third, middle third, and then get him in positions where he can score? So figuring that out, he scored a goal when he was up top in the Champions Cup. My system, 4-2-3-1. He is a 9-10. He played last year on the wing. He prefers to play on the wing. That's what he feels his position is. So it's working all around those things. We need guys to produce, and I need to find the right chemistry as well. We have Esmir, who has not been starting. I think he's a very good piece as well. I think there will be some different decisions for sure. So there will be some different decisions for sure after this long paragraph of Tomas Chankalai not fitting in with the system, not scoring goals, and apparently not playing where he prefers to play, I think is pretty telling. And so I wonder between Tomas and Romney, if these are two victims of the Porter system, if we're going to be seeing less of them, and if we don't necessarily count them as starters, or if this is kind of a motivational benching, maybe just a one-time thing to kind of send a message. From this paragraph, it sounds like Chankalai might not be a starter a ton. So I'm curious to see how it plays out long-term. But either way, these are two key players for the Rebs that we had a lot of expectations for coming into the season. And I have major question marks based on those comments and based on this lineup today. So I don't know if you have any takeaways from that, Tom, but I have alarm bells ringing. And the comment Porter made a few weeks ago about some people not being on the bus, you know, you wonder if these are two people not on the bus right now.
Yeah, I have no idea what he's talking about when he talks about Chankalai. None of anything that he's. First of all, if you think that it's a confidence problem, I would love to hear an explanation on how benching someone who has a confidence problem, how that is going to boost their confidence. I mean, like that's like stupid. No offense to high school coach, like nonsense. Like, oh, I'm going to drop this guy to fire him up. And like, it's just like, that's not how things are done anymore. And they shouldn't have been done that way when they were done that way a long time. Like, it doesn't work. Dropping a player because you think he lacks confidence is going to further erode his confidence. And then the my system, a 4-2-3-1. I'm sorry, he played quite well in a 4-2-3-1 last year. I heard, you know, Moises Linares said during the week that, oh, he's still adjusting to MLS, which is also a bunch of nonsense. He didn't need any time to adjust to MLS at all. He came in last year in a 4-2-3-1, playing out wide, scored a bunch of goals, and he was an outstanding player. So I don't really understand this. He doesn't fit my system nonsense. His system is again, shown tonight, essentially to just knock the ball around and not do anything with it. So, yeah, I mean, he doesn't fit into the system in which, you know, players aren't allowed to take risks and players aren't allowed to do anything that might result in them not having the ball anymore. And this, he's a 9/10. What is a 9/10 exactly? How much overlap is there between what you want from a center forward and what you want from a central attacking midfield player? There's really not that much overlap there. The expectations of a center forward and the expectations of a center mid are totally different. So calling him a 9/10, I don't even I don't even understand what that means and how you can come out again publicly. He comes out publicly and trashes a player and thinks that is going to help him play better. It is one of the many, many things that Porter said this week that makes absolutely no sense.
I have another quote. Sorry, I want to pause on this conversation. I got another quote. All right. Shout out to Seth Makeover for tweeting this out. Caleb Porter, I don't like the result, but I can live with performance. And this is something we can build on. I feel for the guys. I wanted them to get a result after playing so hard and so well. You just want them to get a result to be rewarded for the performance.
He's talking all week about pieces. Oh, we need pieces, 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 pieces. It's all. He must have said pieces 27 times in his press conference. So he comes out all week and says, you know, we need new players in here. Yeah, we've got a core group, but we've got some other pieces that we need to bring in. We need more people. And then he comes out and he's like, oh, like I'm so proud of these guys, and they tried. So it's like, what? Which one is it? Is it the guy that doesn't think that they're performing, or the guy that comes out and sounds like a U9 coach and is just going to praise them no matter what happens? I mean, it's just like, this whole better team stuff. It's like, I swear, he looks at after the game is, oh, do we have more possession? Oh, well, then we must have been the better team. Again,
58.6 possession, by the way.
Yeah, I mean, this is like, this is youth soccer stuff. On it, like, it's ridiculous.
18 shots to their 15. I think that the translation here to how this makes sense, if I'm trying to translate, is that I think he's saying that the system, quote unquote, is getting better. And like, I understand MLS is a long season. There's a long play. And I understand that, like, you know, you look at a team like Sporting Kansas City last year, you know, they were, I think, dead last at one point, and then they end up being the eighth seed. They end up going and beating St. Louis City. Like, that's fine, but
that's not happening here.
Yeah, I mean, that's kind of where I was going. Like, at some point, you got to say, all right, well, we do need the results. And it's late April. It's April 20th. Happy 420 to those who celebrate, by the way. But I don't know. I understand. I'm curious to see what happens in the transfer window. We'll get to that at the end of the show. There might be a signing, but I'm curious to see who's coming in, who's going out. Cause I think I'm happy. You know, he mentions the pieces. I do want to say I'm glad he sees some issues popping up. So I'm glad we're not pretending that everything is well. And I don't know. I appreciate
you don't think why should we have any faith in him? Because they have one spot open. So once they bring in one player, after that, anyone that comes in, someone's going to have to go. So we the fans of this team are going to need to trust that Porter is going to correctly identify who needs to stay and who needs to go. And he had his best defender sat on the bench tonight. He dropped Tronkolay. This is the first time that we've seen Esmer start in some time. This is the first time that Buck has been given any sort of a run out. He seems to keep Nacho out there. No, despite Nacho's best efforts to get himself sent off in almost every single game by seeing if he can be the first player to talk his way into two yellow cards. Like, so why should anyone have any faith that this guy, along with Kurt Anolfo, that these two guys are going to be the guys that are going to reconstruct this roster? I mean, even if you thought it needed reconstructing, and I don't, but let's just say that everyone agreed that this roster needs to be reconstructed. Why would you want Porter and Anolfo to be the ones doing it?
Yeah. Well, let's put a pin on this, because we're going to get to listener questions later. Of course, we lost, so we're going to have Porter and Anolfo questions later. I want to go back to Tronkolay for a minute. So I tried dissecting. And by the way, Moises, your comment aside, thought it was a phenomenal interview. Hopefully we get him back on. If you haven't checked out that interview, go check it out. I thought that was one of the better Apple TV interviews we've done so far. And I we did get some positive comments about it. So appreciate his time. Let's get back to Tronkolay. So I did some research at halftime here, trying to figure out exactly how is Tronkolay playing a little differently, because Porter mentioned the 9-10 thing, which I guess is like a Gustavo Bo type of role, I guess, as opposed to an out-and-out winger. Yeah. And I was talking to someone and they said, you know, he's playing a little more inside. He's not really taking people one-on-one. And you saw that last year. And I was like, okay. And I was like, well, is he shooting less? You know, what's the difference shooting wise? Here's what I found. So last year, in about a little over 1,000 minutes, he had 4.02 shots per 90, 0.32 shots per 90 on target. In about 1,000 minutes, he had 15 shots within the box, 31 shots outside of the box. All six of his goals came from within the box. I don't have stats for the Champions Cup. I believe all four of his goals were inside the box for the Champions Cup. We've talked about this before. Last year, he had 2.61 expected goals. That was about 0.0133 per shot. Okay. So that's not a really high percentage shot. And as again, 31 of his 46 shots were outside of the box. None of those were goals. This year in 720 minutes, this is before he subbed in for today, he had 32 shots, 4 per 90. So that's basically in line with what he had last year. He has 9 shots on target. That's 1.125 per 90. That's higher than 0.32 last year. And then 19 of his 32 shots were within the box. So he's actually gotten more shots within the box this year than he did last year. And then expected goals 2.2, which is approaching what it was last year, 0.6875 per shot. So he's getting much higher quality chances this year. So what this tells me is that even if he's having trouble adjusting, he's still getting his shots per 90. He's still getting his shots on target per 90. He's just not converting. And 3 of his shots have hit the post. So I'm okay. Well, you know, maybe there's a little Adam Buksa-itis here where, you know, he's just a little unlucky. There was one breakaway he had that, you know, I think it was against Chicago that was saved. So, you know, should have finished that, but just looking at these numbers, he's just not finishing. And I think when Vrioni and Chonkalai are both not finishing, that's how you end up with 5 goals in 8 games or 9 games or whatever we're at right now. So I think it's a performance issue, and maybe, as Porter says, you know, the margins are small and his confidence low and whatever, but at the end of the day, he's just got to convert. And I don't think this is really situational. I think it's just his form is, you know, you look at last year, he had 6 goals on 2.6 expected goals. You know, maybe he was playing above the mean and right now he's playing a little below the mean, and hopefully he kind of find his way back to the middle and be a pretty decent player. I'm not giving up on him totally, but you know, I you know, he should have at least 1 goal here.
Yeah, but everything you just said though would support continuing to play him.
Yes.
So
yeah, not much has changed. If you look at these metrics and how he's playing and the chances he's getting, it's in line with what he did last year. So I think you just have to combine, you know, he's not a 6 goal per 1,000 minute guy, he's a 6 goal per 2,000 minute guy.
Yeah, And look, if there was a player that, I mean, I guess he's decided that, you know, well, Esmir is an option instead of Chonkalai, but then is also saying that Nacho is, you know, he going in tonight to tonight, he put Nacho and Esmir ahead of Chonkalai. I don't think a lot of people were calling for that. I think what a lot of people wanted to see was Esmir on one side and Chonkalai on the other, and Nacho and his I mean, the thing that Nacho is the best at, okay, he pops up in some decent positions, but his best quality right now is talking himself into yellow cards and egging on his brother. Like,
he has 1 of the 5 goals from the Revs, so maybe Porter's just looking at the score sheet and saying, well, Nacho scored this year, so.
Yeah, I know, but, like, that's just like,
I don't know.
If he thinks that Chonkalai and Nacho over the longer term, that Nacho is likely to be the better player. I mean, there's not a lot to support that. Nacho's a guy that can pop up, have, you know, 2 or 3 good games in a row, and that's the type of player that he really is. He's similar to Boateng. He's similar to Lima. I don't think that he's really someone that should be an out and out, you know, this guy's in the team sheet no matter what kind of player. But Chonkalai, you know, it should be. And I don't think it's really fair to compare Chonkalai to Vrioni, because we've seen Chonkalai have a sustained run of form, which Vrioni, we've not seen him have. But that hasn't happened yet and probably isn't going to happen. And then just lastly, like on Romney, what possible reason is there for not playing Romney? He's the best of the 4 center backs that they have defensively. He hardly puts a foot wrong. He doesn't give away a lot of fouls. And once again, we see Kessler on the left of a center back pairing that makes his inability to connect passes even more exposed because now he's having to shuffle the ball into his left foot. I mean, it's just mind boggling.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And Mensah, I believe, was out in this game and Romney was the only defensive sub here. I know they put in Boateng for Spalding late in the game when they're pushing forward. I don't really consider that a defensive sub, but you'd think if you need someone who can play both center back and right back on the bench, it'd be Farrell. Because if you need to take Spalding out, okay, then you need to move Farrell to right back and you put in Rod. I don't know. You would think Farrell would be the obvious choice to kind of be the third center back / backup fullback there. I don't know. Farrell did move up a few times, so maybe they don't want to play Kessler and Romney. I'm guessing. I do not know. I do not know what the justification for Shankly over Nacho is, unless, and again, like I could see if a coach is like, you know, this guy's had a rough go. We're just going to give him a week off. Like, that's fine, but you're last, you need a result. Like you, at some point you need to turn around.
Yeah.
So I don't, I mean, I, again, like you have a week off, you're playing Inter Miami next week. You really need a win here.
Need something.
Did you want to talk about Friona today? He had a couple of chances here. He had I believe it was Lima that had the nice long ball in the front. They say on the broadcast, he hesitates a little bit. He takes a shot from a tough angle, right-footed shot from a tough angle. It seemed like he didn't get the shot he wanted, and it was deflected out. Then he had a breakaway, just pure straight on, and Sean Johnson makes a good save going to his right. Probably could have been a little bit better from Friona, but two big chances from Friona, again, zero goals.
He's not going to... The narrow, you know, bandwidth from which he can score, getting the ball onto his right foot, right side of goal from a narrow angle. I mean, you know, that was a great pass from Lima. But what Veroni needs to try and know is his own limitations a little bit better and actually try and turn, get a touch on that ball, right, and turn back to the left, right? Try and essentially like turn his back on the defender, try and roll him a little bit and get it back onto his left foot and either look for a runner or try and get the shot away. Like, I mean, he's not terribly confident with his right foot. So, and he didn't have a good angle and he had a defender in front of him. I mean, he's not going to score from there. And the other chance that he had, you know, good chance in behind. There's a lot that you can do there. You know, maybe you can lob, Johnson from that distance. But really he had time to take a touch. You could have taken a little 3 or 4 yard touch. You know, he could have dabbed his feet at the ball a couple times, try to get Johnson to bite, you know, and maybe rounded him, just slipped it past him. And instead, you know, he shoots first time and, you know, yeah, I mean, look, it's a good save from Johnson, but I think Veroni could have made him work a little bit more there. Yeah. But like you said, I mean, that's what happens when you're not scoring goals.
Yeah, it's just nothing falling for you. I think Sean Johnson also played that one, the breakaway, pretty well for a goalkeeper. So
yeah.
I also will say too, Veroni had a nice cross, 57th minute. Carlos Hill sends him into the box. He has a nice pass right through the box, just no one there. Mark Anthony Kay eventually gets on it, has a nice low shot that's blocked. So good cutback pass, just unfortunately no one there. So some decent moments from Veroni again. We'll try to put it together.
If Veroni. He had no idea what he was doing there. He the announcer was like, "Oh, that's a good ball that he's laid off." It's like, no, it wasn't. They showed the replay. He was looking at the ball. He had absolutely no idea that Kay was going to run onto that. He was just praying, "Please God, let one of the five midfielders behind me have made a run, and please get your foot through this so it looks like I made a good decision."
Tom, we're really trying to find some nice things to say. Can you let him have this one?
He pressed really hard. So
he did. You know. He's getting a little better. We're at least there was a time where Veroni had no chances in a game and he just was completely invisible. And he's actually getting, you know, his runs are getting better. His efforts there, he's pressing pretty well.
Yeah.
There's a little bit of improvement, but we're still a little ways off, kind of like this entire team. So
yeah.
All right. Let's get to listener questions. I'm sure they're happy and cheerful. Let's see. And we're doing this live. So I will do my best to get all the questions in. Let's start here. Let's get into the standard Porter, Adolfo. When are they being let go questions? Swadlowski says, when should front office folks start willingly step down. Public humiliation has to take its toll. Now, I feel like we've talked about Anolfo, Bellello, front office people every single week. And I know there is a question here from Den Dunn, who asks us every week if Anolfo is lasting 20 games. He says seat is getting hot for Kurt. Let's start with the front office and then Porter. Do you think there's a realistic chance that they are let go soon? Same with Porter. Do you think their seats are getting hot, or do you think they'll have some time to work this out and get a few transfer windows to correct their mistakes from previous windows?
I mean, that's the thing, though. You'd have to assume that this roster needs a lot of changes to be a playoff caliber team. And then you'd have to assume that that Anolfo is going to be able to deliver that. And that Porter is going to be able to take whatever players Anolfo is able to acquire and make things happen on the field. And there's no reason to think that either one of these guys can do that. Anolfo, we've talked about this. I mean, from the day he was hired, really, he's going to get two coaches. That's just kind of standard GM stuff. All right. You get to pick your first guy. You get it wrong, you get to pick one more. If you get it wrong twice, then you probably go out with the second guy. But Porter, I mean, what reason is there to think that he's going to turn this around? You know, he keeps going back and forth. Like his press conferences, I'm sorry, his press conferences make absolutely no sense. Like he said, he keeps talking about like the playing style. You know, he said that looking back at the New York City game, right? He said, that's not how we want to play. It was too direct. Like, wait a minute, too direct. Before the New York game, you said that the team needed to simplify their playing style and get the ball forward more. So then they do that. And then you come back like, whoa, that was too, I didn't mean that direct. I meant direct, but not like really, really direct. So now then he says we can't now go back and overplay out of the back, but we do need to play soccer a bit more than we did in that game. So then this week they went back to the refusing to counterattack, knocking the ball around to no, they're just playing around in a U shape and the ball doesn't really go anywhere. Like he just keeps like contradicting whatever Porter said last week. Porter comes out and says something different the week after that. So I just, and the performances aren't there, the results aren't there. So they're kind of comforted by the fact that the season tickets for this year have already been sold. There's 60,000 people coming next week for Messi, and they're not going to get relegated. There's no relegation in MLS. If this was a league that had relegation, I mean, Porter should be gone already.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you're hitting on the ultimate point here, which is I think a lot of soccer fans, when you see a team in last place, it's assumed the coach is going, and that's different in Major League Soccer. You know, Peter Vermees would have been fired last year. I'll go back to the Sporting Kansas City comparison again. You know, that isn't happening here in MLS because, one, you have all season to fix it, right? You sneak in as the ninth best team in your conference, and you have, you know, a playoff game, and you get revenue from a playoff game because they do the stupid 2 out of 3 series. I think they're doing that again. That's so stupid. But anyway, more money for the owners, right? So really, you just need to be a top 9 out of 15 teams, right? And that's kind of the minimum standard threshold, right? And even if you don't make it, you know, if you're like Chicago and you've never made the playoffs in the last half decade, you still extend your GM. So, you know, there's a little more leash just for Major League Soccer teams in general because the ambition is not top team in the league. It's really top 8 teams and hope you get on a run at the end of the year. So there's that, you know, there's not a lot of sense in firing a coach in, you know, April. With that being said, you know, I think you're right. I think Anolfo gets two coaches, and I think he has some goodwill from being a technical director and getting positive marks from that. The other thing too with Porter that I was actually thinking about the other day, let's say you fire Caleb Porter, you need a replacement. You know, you need Savarese, a signature away, or, you know, Robin Fraser or whoever, you know, whoever you're bringing in, you need your next guy lined up because it's not a situation like last year where you fire him and go to an interim, because your interim options right now are one of the two assistants that Caleb Porter brought in, probably not going to be much of an upgrade, Klimpier, Kevin Hitchcock, who's the goalkeeper coach, he's probably not going to be the interim coach, or he could promote Richie Williams from Revs too. And all of those are probably a bit of a disaster for the Revolution. So the Revs would need to line up their next coach before letting go of Porter. And I think that might get him a little bit of some leeway even though the results are disastrous. So before I toss it to you, Tom, let's throw another question in here. Cam says, on a scale of 1 to 100, how hot is the seat for the gaffer? And I should also say that this is not just local people saying this. There was an article, I believe, from Tom Bogart in The Athletic about coaches on the hot seat, and Caleb Porter is listed. Caleb Porter is listed on that article. Certainly poor results here. So on a scale of 1 to 10, I'm going to go about somewhere in the 60s, 60 to 65. I think he does have a few more months here to figure it out, but I'm curious to hear your thoughts.
Like with a serious organization that was really committed to winning and, you know, just wasn't going to accept mediocrity. He should be gone on Monday. You know, you could fire him on Monday. The Messi game is next weekend, so there's going to be a lot of attention around the actually very similar to Messi's arrival in Miami last year. They fired Phil Neville on Monday. That was kind of talked about. And then 2 days later, they announced Messi and nobody talked about Phil Neville in Miami ever again. And if we can get to the point where no one ever talks about Phil Neville ever, that would be great. But this would be a similar opportunity. Everyone, you could forget about him in a week. Messi's coming to town. That's going to be an event. And then, you know, I remember reading an article about, I can't remember his name, the director of Leeds United, after they fired Bielsa and they brought in Jesse Marsh. And he said that if you're if you're a GM or a director of football or whatever it is, you're always talking to coaches, talking to coaches that are available or might be available or that you'd like to bring in someday. And basically you always have a list. Like if you're good at your job, you have a list at all times. If I think I need to make a move, What is the status of these, you know, 5 to 10 guys that I have on this list? Anolfo doesn't strike me as that type of person, but if he was, he should. He should have a list right now of 10 to 15 coaches that are available or could become available after, the Copa America or after the European Championships. And he should be at the point now or in a week or two where he starts to engage with those coaches or their agents about their possible availability. So like you said, if he does decide to fire Porter, he's able to turn around in a day or two and name his replacement.
I want to get into some other questions here because a lot of these are about Porter and the dissatisfaction here. Let's get a little more detailed here. Fern says, I can't help but think we ran into some bad luck on this game, but again, we can't score. Again, we see very inconsistent wing play. We're too afraid of playing the riskier pass. What system is Porter actually trying to play? The players are clearly not on the same page. Tom, you've kind of talked about the mixed messaging in press conferences, but do you have an idea of what Porter is actually trying to do?
No, I have absolutely no idea. You know, the Toronto Till I Die guys asked me the same thing. They're like, you know, so like, what, you know, what's the system that Porter's trying to develop? I'm like, I have no idea.
It's more possession based, but again, you're right. The result is really just moving the ball around
to no end.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, there's not even maybe I'll look up crossing data after we're done here, but you know, there's not really a lot of crossing into the box. It's not really like throwing it up to Adam Buksa and heading it home. It's I don't know. I mean, I think they were coming this game, they were 21st in touches in the opponent's box. So, I mean, you can have all the possession you want if you're not getting it into dangerous areas. And then when you do get into dangerous areas, like Thomas Chankalai is, and you're not finishing, then you're kind of screwed. So Mike D says, at what point do you say my system isn't working with these players and you change the system to match the players you have? Does Porter really think he's got time to keep losing to fit the round peg into the square hole with these tactics and players? I think he does think that. I think he thinks he's getting a couple of windows here. And if this was the Premier League, he wouldn't. I think there is a long-term vision of, okay, this system is going to take a while to implement. It's going to take more than preseason and Champions Cup and a few games here and there. Any thoughts? I mean, I think it's right, but I don't think Porter is going to completely try to undo everything, because I think that might send even worse messaging to the team. I think he's going to try to stick it through, but I don't know what the end result is here.
Well, we saw the full implementation of his style his last 2 years in Columbus, and this is what it was. This is exactly what it was. Lots of possession, didn't really go anywhere with it. They were allergic to counterattacks. Like, this is the system. This is how he wants teams to play. Because, I keep going back to, I watched games from 2022 when he was coaching Columbus. That was his fourth year there. So I would imagine in year four, I can't imagine he's here that long. But I would imagine by that point, you're out of excuses. You would have had 8 transfer windows at that point and 4 years to instill your system so it's being played the way that you want it to be played. And this is what it looked like. It looked like knocking the ball around for the sake of knocking the ball around, not counterattacking. And we started again tonight. They were up, Nacho's cutting the ball back. Carlos is throwing his hands up in the air. Like, you had runners. You had players running towards the other team's goal, which is generally a good thing to do. And the next best thing to do after that is to try and pass one of them the soccer ball. But he doesn't do it. He takes 7 touches. He dribbles around in a circle, passes it back, and throws his arms up in the air. So, like, this is what his Columbus Crew team did. Like, this is the system. This is the system, by the way, that after he left after 4 years, they turned around and they won MLS Cup in 2023 with a coach who actually has a system, who actually, you can see, you watch a Columbus Crew game now for 10, 15 minutes, you can very clearly see the style, and it's very enjoyable to watch. This is how he coaches his teams to play. It's not effective, and it is beyond boring to sit and watch every single week.
John Trainer says, Friedel got fired after starting 2-8-2 in 2019, but that wasn't his first year in charge. Realistically, how bad do things have to get before Porter's job is actually in jeopardy? I will say probably if they are mathematically eliminated, I shouldn't say mathematically, but if playoffs are looking like a long shot very early in the season, I think if we're still at the bottom of the standings in, I don't know, midpoint of the season, I think that's when there's some real conversation. But again, I think he's going to get a chance to solve this. And I think too, you know, he came in with this roster. There are certainly some flaws in this roster. So I don't think 100% of the blame is on Porter. I certainly think you have to blame the front office a little bit too. So I think when playoffs look like they are out of reach or a long shot, I think they might make that decision. But I think right now in April, again, there's a long way to go. I think they're 7 points off from the playoff line right now, which is pretty terrible for 8 games. But you know, you rattle off a few wins, you're back in the thick of things. That's how MLS goes. So I think he's going to have a little bit of wiggle room here, as I've said a little bit before. Any disagreement there, Tom? You want to disagree with me?
The last game before League's Cup, if they are not in a playoff position, if he's, let's be realistic, right? Okay. On awful. The Revs never rocked the boat on anything. They've never made a bold move since the day they were founded. I guess the founding of the club would be the boldest thing they've ever done. If they get to the break for League's Cup and they're out of a playoff spot, then that has to be the time. Because even then, there's still 10 games after League's Cup is over. And again, as ridiculous as this league is and as many teams as make the playoffs, you can actually do a lot in 10 games. So basically, you fire him. You tell him at the beginning of July, this is the deal, Porter. If you're not in a playoff spot when we take the break to League's Cup, you're out. That's it. You have until that time to drag this team into 9th place. If you can't, you're gone. And then you give the new guy, assuming that you've done due diligence and you've actually done your job, you bring somebody in and you tell them, you've got League's Cup, 2, maybe 3, maybe 4 games to figure this out, and then you've got 10 games to try and make the playoffs. So use League's Cup as preseason and then try and make a run and sneak in the back door of the playoffs.
I guess League's Cup, too, might impact the decision. If they lose, if they crash out of League's Cup, maybe that impacts the decision, too. But the other thing, too, is I guess it depends on the current form. I mean, if they're in 10th place at the end of League's Cup and they've won 3 in a row, maybe we're a little more sympathetic. But, yeah, if they're in dead last at the end of League's Cup, I think there's a real conversation. Mild Bill Davison, seeing as Caleb Porter can't make up his mind, who would you choose as the Revs starting 11? Who's your starting 11, Tom?
With the players that are presently available, right? I mean, you have to be Ravas, Lima by default, Farrell and Romney, Spalding by default. Kay and Harkes. You know, Kay actually took a couple players on and dribbled forward today, which, you know, no one else seems to be willing to do, which is probably why he's not playing. Carlos in front of the two of them, Chonkalai on the left, Esmer on the right. And, you know, at least until Borrero comes back, you know, you keep sticking Veroni up top.
Yeah, I might go. Boy, the midfield's a bit of a mess right now. You said Kay. I'd probably go Polster over Kay. I like Polster a little more than Kay. I know we disagree with that. Although Kay actually was pretty decent tonight. I don't know. There's no great pairings right now. Maybe Nolbuck. I don't know. New guy. Well, yeah, I don't know. Traeger says, if you were to no, that's not the question I was going to go with. I'll go to a different one. Roberta says, how can you ever develop teamwork if you keep switching the starting 11 each week? I don't care if you have a player you like better. Keep working the same team so they know what's happening. Jeesh. Any feedback there?
No, I mean, that is a fair point. You know, like you keep chopping and changing, and then you keep changing what it is that, at least what he's saying publicly. I mean, I can understand why these guys are confused. You know, you're telling us that you got to, you got to play in your system, but then you start talking about a short-term and a long-term vision, and then you start talking about, like, going back to the long-term vision, but not, like, not all the way back. I mean, like, yeah, you're chopping and changing the messaging. You're chopping and changing the lineup. You know, he's got a bit of a habit of, you know, he tried to create a goalkeeping controversy where there was no controversy to be had. Edwards is a backup, and that's what he is, and that's what he always will be. You know, now he's challenging Chonkalai in public. I mean, it doesn't seem to be a good way to bring a team together.
Hey, you know what? At least it's entertaining, right? I'll take it over 4 years of Bruce Arena stonewalling questions at a press conference, only to answer the same questions on the 98.5 interview 10 minutes later. So, Big John says, hopefully Porter can stop with the Vrioni praise and just sign a useful striker. How long until Porter is gone? We've talked about that. Big John says, I give him about 1 month. On the bright side, Barrera will be back soon. It might not change a whole lot, but it'll be nice seeing him back on the field. That is true. He's, I believe, started training. So there are talks about him coming back in the next few weeks. So it will be interesting to see how he changes things. Josh Goulet says, Ravas, terrible decisions coming out, but saves a penalty. Is this growth or just mediocrity averaging out in a game? I'll let you take that one first, Tom. I have some thoughts here, but I'll defer to you on your thoughts on Ravas.
I mean, people are just, I don't know. I just feel like some people just kind of, they're just, it's similar to how people are really hard on Ferrell. You know, you're just sitting around waiting for him to make a mistake so you can latch onto it and go, he's failed again. But I just think people are still, again, you're still hung up on, like, Turner's not here anymore. Petrovic isn't here anymore. Like, this is about what you can expect for a non-DP MLS level goalkeeper. Like, he's fine. He's not great. He's not horrible. He's better than Edwards. I'm at least glad that no one's calling for, like, something ridiculous like Justin Jackson. Like he should get his shot. Like, he's the best goalkeeper that the team has, and, you know, he's fine. Not great, but he's fine.
I will say this, because I'll push back a little bit, because I think athletically, reflex-wise, he has the physical traits of a good goalkeeper in Major League Soccer. I think the issue comes in that he makes some mistakes, kind of like what we saw today. And so when we talk about averaging out, I don't know, like, I'd call him a mediocre goalkeeper, because I think he's a good goalkeeper. I think he's a good goalkeeper that is mistake prone, and that costs teams. I remember a few years ago, Sean and I did a podcast. We were talking about, I think it was Michael Mantien or De La Maye or someone. And De La Maye had like 3 games in a row, or I forget exactly who it was. So I'm probably smearing De La Maye up, but I forget who it was. It was center back, and they made like some terrible decisions like 3 weeks in a row. And it was like, you know, they do everything else right. They're pretty solid otherwise, but there's just like a few things there. And I was like, so I don't think he's a bad defender. I just think he makes some mistakes. And Sean was like, yeah, that's a bad defender. So I think that's kind of like when Ravas cleans up these mistakes of, you know, the two mistakes we saw today. I know he missed a punch a few weeks ago. Once he cleans up those mistakes, I think he's going to actually be a pretty solid goalkeeper. It's just when you're the goalkeeper and you screw up and it leads to a goal. You know, if one of those two, you know, mistakes lead to a goal today, you know, we're getting 50 questions about Ravas and when we're, you know, punting him back to Europe and if we should start Jacob Jackson. So, you know, I think there's he needs to clean up the mistakes a little bit, but overall on the whole, I see the potential for Ravas being a good, not great MLS goalkeeper. Is that fair?
Yeah, but the thing is though, like, you know, the mistakes that goalkeepers make get highlighted, but the reality is for the goalkeeper to even be in a position to make a mistake, many other things already needed to have gone wrong at that point. And I also think that this team as a whole is struggling and they don't trust one another. And it's very hard to trust your teammates when you're, you know, you're losing every single week. Yeah. So it's hard for Ravis to trust that Farrell, who hasn't played recently, is going to be able to deal with an attacking player on a ball in behind. Has he made some mistakes? Yeah, of course. Absolutely he has. Are mistakes by goalkeepers magnified? Absolutely they are. It's the easiest thing to point to when something goes wrong. And even like the broadcasts. Goal goes in. They show the celebration, and then who's the first player they flash to? Unless it was an own goal. First player they flash to is the goalkeeper. You know, like there was a discussion last week about the second goal that they gave up, like as to, oh yeah, maybe he could have got that one. It's like, no. Yeah. So yeah, I get it. He's not great. He makes mistakes, but if the goalkeeper is making mistakes, other things have already gone wrong. And this team certainly, as a collective group, gets many, many things wrong.
Oh, no debate there. I agree with this.
It's just all bad, right? Like,
it's just all bad. The title of the show, it's just all bad. Traeger, if you were to name Ravis's style of goalkeeping, what would you call it? He also says, is Ravis only here because he's tall? We talked about he's not just here because he's tall. He does have some ability. He actually has some good reflexes and is pretty steady at shot stopping. One word to describe the Henrik Ravis experience. Tonight I'd say YOLO. It seemed like a little bit of Leroy Jenkins from some of those turnovers in the first 30 minutes, but it ended up fine. I don't know. You have a good word to describe Ravis?
Yeah, fine.
All right, I like that. Revs ball knower. I know I'm crazy, but I'm still excited for Saturday. Will be fun to see a nearly full stadium for a Revs game. Only positive I can think of. Fair enough. Bubba Dubs, honestly, what can this team do to stop the bleeding? Realistic players aren't coming through that door to make an immediate impact with issues like waiting for visas. And then if they need to get up to fitness level, what can this team do to stop the bleeding? I have no suggestions. Do you have any suggestions on what the team can do right now?
It's not going to stop next week. That's for sure. I mean, you can pretty much just punt that game. And then after that, they have two more games on the road against Chicago and the Red Bulls. They have 0 points from four away games. So the next three, you know, not looking like the bleeding is going to stop there. And then they have Philadelphia at home. That's always a difficult game. So you're looking at Saturday, May 25th against New York City. That might be the next time that they get, I don't know, anything, a single solitary point.
You know what you do, Tom? I just thought of it. This has worked every time Caleb Porter has done this. Caleb Porter should promise a win, then walk it back, bizarrely walk it back midweek, say he was taken out of context, even though the context is that no one asked him to promise a win. He just kind of blurted it out. Claim you're out of context, say that you were just joking, and then win the game. And have social media refer to that promised win. Give a bag of popcorn to Carlos Heel, which is mocking the response to a guaranteed win that you absolutely did guarantee. So I think that's what you do. You promise the win, and then you slowly walk it back, and you criticize people for blowing what you said out of proportion and out of context. I think that is the best motivational thing Caleb Porter has done so far this year.
Yeah, he just says so many things that, like, okay. You know, he also said this week, I'm learning more and more every day about who I can count on and the type of quality that I'm going to get out of guys. You especially know that when your backs are against the wall, you see everybody's best face when adversity kicks in like this. You can see everybody's worst face, but if you're a winner and you're a leader and you have quality, then you step up. Like, worst face, best face. Like, what he sounds like he's reading lyrics from The Stranger by Billy Joel. Like, the things that he says are just, it's just like, they make absolutely no sense. Like, what is he talking about? Worst face, best face. He guarantees a win and then turns around and says, oh, it was taken out of context. It's like, no, it wasn't taken out of context. It was a direct quote. You know, said those words. Like,
Yeah. You know what's funny, too, is that you just got stomped by Club America. I haven't been on the show in 2 weeks, so I get to complain about this. I know it's a dead issue. I'm still going to complain about it. You just got stomped by Club America. I know what he's doing. He's trying to turn the page. He's trying to draw attention to the next game to try to get everyone to forget about the 4-0 drubbing you just did. And it worked. And then you went out and you win. So, you know, just take it. Take a W. I don't totally hate him doing it. It's bold. It certainly will blow up in your face if you don't win that game.
But yeah, but you got to do something.
Context. I mean, what?
I know. It's just. Well,
then what's crazy is that. So in the clip, if you hear it, Zoe or Bertrand says in the moment, like, "Oh, first win this season," right? He says it in the moment, and then the next week they go on the radio and they have to like line him up with the question, like, "I know you weren't. I know you just kind of said that off the cuff. I know you didn't really mean it, but does it feel good that you know you had that win that you promised or whatever?" It's like, ah, geez, come on. He said it.
He can't stand behind anything.
He just, I don't know. I'm curious. I don't know. It's there's not much things you can say when you're losing game after game after game, but even in the win, they shoot themselves in the foot. So I don't know. Any turf body count says minus all the casuals expecting to see Messi this weekend, Gillette Stadium is going to see like a ghost town over the next few months. I will be curious to see. I mean, attendance will be, tickets sold. So we're not going to know, but I am curious to see how bad it gets. Cause in the summer months, they're usually a little bit better, but we'll see. Pex Elite says genuinely feel like we would lose to Vermont Green. Thoughts on further clogging the midfield with the Baba transfer rumors. Let's get to that now. Just, so we have a, we move off of firing Caleb Porter and his press conferences. Idrissou Baba, it was reported by Hugo Cerezo of Ravello, which is in Spain, that Idrissou Baba is potentially coming to the Revs, and it is expected that he will join the Revolution. He played with Elmira. I'm probably mispronouncing that. Everyone knows I cannot pronounce names. But he was on loan from Mallorca, which is where he spent most of his career. Apparently, it was a loan with an option to buy. The report says it was required to purchase him, so I'm guessing he met some sort of incentive. And Elmira is getting relegated, so they don't need him anymore. So the Revs might be getting him here at a little bit of a discount. He's a defensive midfielder, 28 years old. He is part of the Ghanaian national team setup. He played in the 2023 African Cup of Nations. He would have played in the 2022 World Cup, or it looks like he would have, but he was injured, and that's also part of the reason that Mallorca moved on from him. But he's still getting call-ups to the national team, so it might be something here. But to me, strikes me as maybe a guy that is taking Polster or Mark Anthony Kay out of the lineup. Football Reference has him at 78% of tackles, 91% in clearances, and 92% in aerials amongst midfielders. What's your thoughts on this move?
Yeah, I mean, he seems like a decent enough player. I mean, I looked more at his attacking stats to see if he might be someone capable of passing the ball forward, the thing is, right, like, you'd be getting someone who's played in Spain for quite some time. You know, look, I watched a couple of his highlight videos, but obviously highlight videos only show him doing well. But look, a halfway decent player in La Liga usually translates into being a pretty solid player in MLS. I know a lot of people are like, oh, well, the midfield's too crowded. It's like, well, is the midfield really that crowded? He only plays K when he absolutely has to. Buck played for the first time in weeks tonight. So I don't think he's really, you know, he's not really bending over backwards to get the two of them into the team. Tommy McNamara needs to not play in MLS anymore. There's guys there, but there's not guys that are putting in like 7, 8 out of 10 performances that should be in there. I don't think it will, if it meant like less Matt Polster on the field, I would be all for the acquisition of almost anyone.
Well, I will say this too. I think part of the clogged issue is that you have a lot of players that are just going to be sitting around. It already feels like there are a lot of central midfielders that are kind of being rotated in and out, but none of them are really giving you, you know, this guy's going to start 30 games vibes. So I think this guy is going to come in. Baba is going to come in and, hopefully be a lockdown starter. And I imagine too, you only have one senior roster spot left on the team. And you certainly need to add more than just a central midfielder. So my guess is that some people are moving out. So I wouldn't be shocked to see a trade. I know the second buyout might be coming in. We had an article on the Blazing Musket about potential buyouts. And, you know, one person we didn't mention is Mark Anthony Kay. Mark Anthony Kay is on TAM money. I believe he's around $700,000. And he's got a contract, guaranteed contract this year and next year. If this guy's taking away minutes from Mark Anthony Kay and you don't find a trade partner, from Mark Anthony Kay. Is he a buyout candidate? You know, is Tommy McNamara a buyout candidate, which we talked about? His contract, his guaranteed contract ends at the end of the year. So, you know, but I think if you're using the buyout, I think you move off of one of those guys and you open up a spot and you move, you know, another player in. But I think at the end of the day, you know, people talk about the clogged midfield and you're going to have a lot of midfielders sitting around doing nothing. I imagine someone is moving out if Baba is coming in, whether or not they have a trade lined up already or if, you know, they have an idea of what to do with the second buyout when it hits. But either way, I can't imagine that they end the season with all of these midfielders on the team. So it'll be interesting to see what happens. In terms of the player himself, you know, Ghanaian national team, you know, he's no slouch, it seems like. I'm not sure how well he fits in terms of passing. I mean, from what I saw limited highlights. You know, there aren't many YouTube highlight videos of defensive midfielders, something to say, but certainly seems like a decent anchor in the midfield, a strong defender. Not totally sure about his passing ability, but again, this is just based off of, you know, a handful of clips that I've seen. I can't sit here and say that I am a great scout of relegation sides in La Liga. So time will tell how he fits in the team.
Yeah, the other thing is too, like, you know, if we're talking about making trades, I mean, that's going to be a little bit of a challenge because you're going to be trying to trade players that, you know, aren't playing on a team that's in last place. So, like, it's going to be tough to make any maneuvers where you're not going to be sending someone that you don't want and then having to, like, package or throw in, you know, young players that you might actually, you know, like, I don't... The second buyout is possibly going to be a really big help to them because if they want to use, if they bring this guy in and then they want to use those two U22 spots, they've got to find a way to get rid of two more players. And so I think you're in a tough position trying to trade guys you don't want from a team that's in last place.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. It's not great. And the other thing too is you're selling them for not a great return, right? You're really just trying to shed salary because people know you're desperate to get people off. I mean, I think Miami sold off Yedlin for like 100K in GAM. because everyone knew they were in cap hell, and so no one was trading with them because they knew they had to sell off a player at a discount. So Aug on Twitter just came in. He says Ravas with more heroics. This was right after the penalty. Our dirty secret is how the defense has been bailed out for years by elite keeper play. We've talked about that, Tom. You have mentioned that. Anthony on Threads, be our friend on Threads. We're still on Threads. We're taking questions from Threads when I see the notifications. He says, is it me or is Shankalai too trigger happy? And I talked about the stats a little bit earlier. He's actually getting in the box more of his shots. He's shooting around the same per 90, but more shots are in the box. They're just not going in. So I don't think he's trigger happy compared to where he was last year. It's just, they're not going in. And then he also says, is this just a weak Toronto or is Andrew Farrell proving he's still a starter? I believe this was before the goal, which again, I think you can blame Farrell a little bit for it. Probably could have closed down, but it was still a great goal. What are your thoughts about Andrew Farrell? Do you think that he his stock rose at all today?
Well, I mean, I would hope so. Of the four center backs that they have, the only one that seems to be capable of playing a line-splitting pass with any degree of accuracy, he's the only one out of the four. The rest of them either can't or will not do it. He'll venture out a little bit with the ball. Like he's a bit of a, you know, he's more willing to try and thread those types of passes. And, you know, Porter claims that he doesn't just want them to play around in a U shape with 60% possession. And if that is true, then you only have one center back out of the four that can help the team not do that. And, you know, I think we saw bits and pieces of that tonight. So, but I think he would be better paired with Romney because Romney is very, very good at covering, whether it's for the outside backs or a center back partner. You know, he typically is just always in, you know, the right place at the right time. And so a more conservative player like that covering for Farrell, who's going to take some chances with the ball, you know, like you need somebody between the two center backs and the two deep midfielders. Like one of those four players has got to try and do something. Or, you know, we're just going to continue to get what we get.
Mm-hmm. I'm going to wrap up. We're a little over the hour mark, so hopefully I'll get to most of these questions. If I don't, I will It's because it is a little redundant, but we'll see how it goes. Will Morris, he says, what crime against humanity do the Hill brothers think is being committed against them every time the opposing team fouls one of them? I'm going to say murder. I did enjoy Nacho Hill. I forget who fouled him, but someone fouls him and he goes down and he's rolling around. Clearly someone says something to him that pissed him off and he hopped right back up and got in his face. I thought that was really funny, but yeah, more theatrics today from the Hill brothers.
It's just so frustrating. It's like, the more you do that, the less the referees are going to listen to you. Like, that's just how it goes. The more that you get in their faces and scream at them, and then they start doing this in like the third, fourth minute. Like, it was kind of funny early in the season. Like, it's not funny anymore. And I thought they were just doing it because it's like, oh yeah, we got to make these replacement refs look as bad as possible. But they're still doing it. It's just like, I don't know. It's a really bad look. This team in general, to be honest, like several of them, like their behavior towards the referee, the frequency of giving away, like they've got to be on pace to set the MLS record for most yellow cards for dissent in the season. And it's not helping. It's, you know, it's a bad look, you know, to quote on 420, to quote Super Troopers, you know, desperation is a stinky cologne. When you're flying off the handle and throwing a fit at every single conceivable infraction against you, like it's a bad look and it's not going to get you anything. The refs aren't going to put up with this crap.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Love the Super Troopers reference. I will Venmo you $10 if you can fit the word meow naturally into your answers. How many times do you have to say it? Like 8 or 10, 9 or 10 or something like that? And Jim Gaffigan is just in the back. Kind of like, what the hell? What Now Really says, I'm guessing Messi won't feel like he needs to play the next game on turf. His teammates will give the Revs a game even without him on the pitch. Agree or disagree? What do you think? Do you think that Inter Miami can dispose of the Revs without Lionel Messi next week?
I'm sure they could, but look, if the Revs aren't going to get anything out of that game, you might as well have Messi play. Like, I mean, what's the difference? Like, you know what I mean? Like, if they're not going to win that game, then he might as well play, score, you know, one or two, you know, ridiculous goals. So we can at least say we saw the greatest player of all time score two ridiculous goals in Gillette Stadium. Cause that's probably all that anyone is going to get out of that game next week.
And you can see one of the greatest players of all time score two ridiculous goals at Gillette Stadium by entering the Blazing Muskets raffle. Go make sure you comment on their article so you get a free entry. If you're a paid subscriber, if you're not, you can still sign up to be a paid subscriber. The entries close on Monday. Remember to do that. Alan Garcia, any silver linings? We need a bit of hope in these times of darkness. Give me a silver lining here, Tom.
Well,
I think they stopped the cardboard boxes, right? I haven't seen those in a while. That's good.
Well, because we've been on the road for the last two games. They'll be back. Yeah. Don't you worry. They'll be back next week. Silver linings. No. I mean, they're really like, no, not really.
Better
team. It's like, come on. No one's going to, you can only say that. Like I used to say that as a youth coach, because there's no stats, right? Like we would lose like 2-1. I'd be like, we're the better team anyway, you know, blah, blah, blah. Like, cause no one could come back to me and say, well, actually you lost the XG battle. Like, you know what I mean? Like it's easy. God, we were the better,
you know, team. I coached a fourth, fifth grade basketball team this past year. It's rec basketball and they allowed zone defense and all. None of my players could reach the basket. And so I just kept tracking like steals, blocks, rebounds, like all the stats, like not scoring. So at the end of the game, I see all the things you did do well. And that's the regression we've done with Caleb Porter, where he's probably just in the back and like, see, we got 59% possession. We're doing great. System's working. Yeah, right. Trust me, guys. Silver lining. Genuinely silver lining. The silver lining is that I think the team is at least talking and acting like they will be active, and we already have a player potentially coming in. So I think, especially with this past offseason where I don't think the team did nearly enough for the 2024 season. I think the silver lining is that the team looks like they know things need to change. Like they aren't completely delusional in thinking that this team will win MLS Cup in 2024 and they need to be proactive to change it. So that'll be my attempt at a silver lining, right? We'll go with that. All right. Tom's giving me a face.
Yeah. But like, I mean, you've got to be worried about like, who are they going to get rid of?
I mean, it's
and well, I, like, you know,
kind of trade partner for some of these guys.
Who? Tommy McNamara. Who wants Tommy McNamara?
Not Tommy McNamara, but I think you could find a trade partner for Polster. I don't know about Mark Anthony Kay because he's got a 2-year contract and that's TAM money. That's a little tough.
Kay gets traded once a year, apparently. So
he does. That is true. He gets traded. Even if you trade bad contract for bad contract and fit somewhere else, you know. Who else could you trade? I mean, I guess it kind of depends, but you know, could you find a fit for Ema Boateng's on a supplemental contract? So that won't open up a senior roster spot, but you know, maybe Ryan Spalding. I think there are some bit pieces that you can move on from don't rock the boat.
But Jones is out for 4 to 6 weeks. Turns out
after that window, I think that's fine. You can salary dump some players. I mean, other teams have injuries too, and if you're offloading players for cheap, people will take them. So you're right. It's who exactly, you know, you have two strikers, so you can't trade either of them.
One's going to take Bobby Wood.
Yeah. He's hurt. Yeah. He looked fine today. I think the knee injuries that they're talking about, I think he's working his way back, but I think some people are freaking out about his knee. I think he's fine. Let's get back to this. Ava says, why is everyone blaming the front office? Like, I get it. They may suck, but that's not the reason your current players have no chemistry. I do want to pause here, right? Because right now the big debate is who's to blame. Is it Porter? Is it the front office? Is it the players? The answer is all of the above. The front office handed Caleb Porter a roster that doesn't fit his tactics. Caleb Porter is playing these tactics with a roster that he's not playing to the strengths. And the players, outside of Carlos Heel, I think every single player you can argue is not performing well or not meeting the standards we have for them. So I think there's a lot of blame to go around. And the front office, you know, as we just mentioned, they have one senior roster spot and they need to make a lot of changes. So they have a lot of undoing of previous mistakes that they have. So I that's my take real quick. Moving along because we're at 110. Gabo, is Vrioni capable of scoring? Can someone name one good thing about Polster or Farrell? You talked about Farrell a little bit. We talked about Vrioni a little bit earlier, so we'll pass on those. Can you name one good thing about Matt Polster, Tom? I know you're a big fan.
I mean, he did have a successful dribble tonight. He actually dribbled past two players before taking a heavy touch and throwing himself to the ground and trying to win a penalty. But for a brief moment, he did show an ability to take the ball and carry it forward. So there was that. And I will say this too about Polster, you know, to be honest, he does pop up with the occasional, like he's in the penalty area. The ball comes to him. He doesn't have enough time to like process anything. So he just rifles his foot through it. And it finds like, you know, he's a decent in the box player. And he did dribble the ball forward tonight. So, you know, not all bad, but look, the thing about the who should you blame, right? Every single player on this team, with the exception of Ryan Spalding, is performing worse than last season. Every single one of them. So I don't really see how you can blame individual players when all of them are performing worse. And every aspect of the way this team plays, none of it is going. They're not attacking well. They're not defending well. Set pieces aren't going great, whether they're attacking or defending. Their transitions aren't great. Like nothing is going well, and all of the players individually are performing worse than they did last year. And they're not that old of a team. So I would say it's 70% on Porter, 20% on the front office, and 10% on the players.
That's fair. That's fair. He also says, Gabo also says, realistically, how soon can we rebuild the squad? I mean, that depends on what you're looking to do. I'll do my roster breakdown episode when salary data is released. I think that's going to be coming in a few weeks. It's usually in mid-May. when the MLSPA salary data comes out. So Gabbo, I would recommend listening to that, and I will let you know what contracts are up at the end of the year. I believe there's a lot of options going into next year. So if the team really wants to turn over the roster, there will be a big offseason next year. In terms of rebuilding, though, it's hard, because even in a rebuild in MLS, you know, you're normally in a sport, you know, MLS, you know, NBA, NFL, you know, you draft a quarterback, or, you know, if you're the Spurs and you have Wembanyama and you have a terrible year, you know, you're like, well, we got to sell him a rookie contract. We can add a high draft pick next year, and then we'll sign some veterans. We have a good team. You know, you play the young guys, but here you play the young guys, and then, you know, Europe is interested and you sell them. So, you could play the kids, but ultimately, does that lead to your long-term success? I don't know. So, I don't know. In terms of rebuilding, I'd say the big transfer window we can look forward to is the end of the year. But I expect to see some moves. You know, I don't know if there's going to be much before the window closes on Tuesday besides Baba, but some players have to go out this summer. I mean, they just have to. I don't know how they're going to move them out, but some of them do. Some of them have to move on. We talked about Dave Romney at the start of this episode. I mean, could Dave Romney be on the trade block? You're not starting him.
God. Can you even imagine if that, I mean, Jesus.
No, I just say, why not? If he's not going to start, trade him, right?
But that's the sign. The sign that the coach doesn't know what he's doing is he says, let's trade Dave Romney. No, sorry. You must go now. Like that should be the test. You want to trade one of the best and most consistent center backs in this league because you don't like him and you prefer Henry Kessler. Like, that's what I mean. Even if this team needs to be rebuilt, why should anyone want Porter to be the one that does it? If he thinks that Dave Romney is part of the problem, I mean, I don't know. It just doesn't make sense.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. We did get one more comment here from Eric. Listen to the last pod. I was thinking Porter should have 3 more games left to save himself. Toronto, Miami, Chicago, because that brought him to an even 10. I'm not even sure about that now. Souring him a lot more than the players. So again, I think that might be a little bit of a faster timeline than reality, but he is souring on Porter, similar to a lot of people. One more comment here. John Pilkington. Should the Revs try to poach Albert Dequa from RAFC? I'll take anything at this point. I don't know how Deke was doing. I think he's got 2 goals. I'd have to go back and look, but shout out to RFC. I believe they won tonight. So they're on the win column. They went out to LAFC and won. Please tell me they did. I'd feel really terrible if they didn't win. I believe they're winning.
They were winning. I mean, they haven't won a game all season, and they got cup set during the week. So, I mean, let's see here. Oh, wow. Look at that. They did. They won 2-1. Let's see. How many goals did Deke score? Looking. He did not score. So, I mean,
Bucks. Like, some USL Golden Boot winner can't even score against Las Vegas.
I don't know. I saw him play a couple times, and I mean, he's a poacher. Like, I don't know that you'd get really that much more out of him. Like, I get it. Like, people think he's really good because he scored 20 goals in the USL, but if he was that good, would he be in USL? Probably not.
Now, Noah Fusan. Now, that is a player. Let's see. That is wrapping us up. Only other thing I have in my notes here is DeJuan Jones is out for 4 weeks with a grade 3 hamstring strain. That is my child waking up in the middle of the night, unfortunately. So we got to wrap this up. Tom, any final thoughts here?
No. I mean, I feel like your young child there just crying in the night. Alone in the dark, not understanding what's happening. Yeah, I can empathize.
She's making her thoughts of Caleb Porter known. She heard me saying we're going to trade Dave Romney, and now she is awakened from her slumber, upset. The only thing I'm going to throw out there is that if you're tired of watching the Revs and you need something cheerful to watch, I highly recommend watching Conan O'Brien on his episode of Hot Ones. It came out last week. It is one of the greatest things I have ever seen. I am a big fan of Conan O'Brien between his late show and his time with The Simpsons. And you feel a little dumb watching it. But if you want to see Conan O'Brien chug hot sauce and give you a history lesson on Warren G. Harding, highly recommend it. It's about half an hour long, and you will enjoy it much more than a New England Revolution game. So that's about it. Tom, thank you for joining us here today. You can read Tom's writing over on The Blazing Musket, and he is not on social media, even though people desperately want you on Twitter, Tom. You are a man of the people.
Yeah. I was also told that if I move to Toronto, I have a job up there as well.
And TFC Live is trying to poach you from us.
Yeah. Well, you know, Canada's got a lot going for it. You know, I don't know. It's a nice city. I was up there for a couple days. They have a lot of, you know, their Italian diaspora is actually quite large. So,
Are you a hockey fan?
No, you know, it's funny though. I used to cover baseball. I did a lot of like sabermetric statistical analysis stuff. And, I actually covered the Blue Jays during that time because the Red Sox coverage was saturated. So I latched myself to the Blue Jays and covered them for a couple of years. So I do have blogging or writing experience with Toronto sports teams. So I think I might be able to fit in up there.
Well, if you want to watch TFC and the Blue Jays more than the Revs and the Red Sox, which I won't blame you, you might be headed up north. But if you're not a hockey fan, you can't move to Canada. That's just, yeah, it's just how
it goes. You just don't tell anyone.
I guess. Can you fake it though? I think they'd weed you out really quick.
Nah, I mean, I used to bartend, and I used to work the Sunday afternoon shift. So I had to pretend there was a bunch of guys there that really loved the NFL, and they wouldn't have known that I could absolutely care less about the NFL. I did a very, very good job of, I'd be like, oh yeah, well, boy, yeah, their running game's really coming along this year and blah, 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 blah. So I was able to fake those guys out for 2 or 3 years. So I think I could put up the mirage that I'm a hockey fan.
Mm-hmm. Fake Canadian, but yeah. Well, either way, I hope you don't abandon us for TFC Live or any other podcasts you go on. But again, thank you to TFC Live for having, I'll say us on, but it was really you, Tom. Big shout out to them. And also be sure to follow the podcast on Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, Threads, Blue Sky, any social media platform you can think of. We are on there. So go follow us. We can see us under Revolution Recap. Please also make sure you rate and review us on iTunes. I did not write down the name of the person who left us a very nice review on iTunes, but we did get a 5-star review this week and we appreciate it very much. So if you want to make my day, please make sure you leave us a 5-star review on iTunes or Spotify or wherever you are listening. Make sure you check out our friends over at the Blazing Musket. Subscribe to their website. You can do a free or paid subscription. And if you get a paid subscription, you can enter their raffle, which is closing this Monday, where you can enter a chance to win 2 tickets to next weekend's Inter Miami game, where you can see Lionel Messi play or sit on the sidelines to be determined. Thank you, everyone, for listening to Revolution Recap, presented by our sponsor, Bet Online. We'll be back next week following the Inter Miami match with another podcast, and we may have another lovely midweek episode for you guys, so we'll see about that. But again, thank you everyone for listening, and go Revs.